Hello, welcome to another edition of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. I am your host, Lindsay Recknell, and I am here with my friend and soon to be your friend, Josephine Tight. Hello, Josephine.
Hello, Lindsay.
Every time I start these interviews, I think, man, I really need to make sure that I pronounce the guest name correctly. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I was just thinking the same about yours.
Isn't that funny? And often I will actually stop and like restart the recording, but I was reasonably confident that I got it right. So I'm glad that I did. Thank you for being here today. I think everybody is really going to love to hear your story and the work that you do and to hear about the new lens you have to your work because of our conversation about hope.
Yes.
I will let everybody know a little, I'll read your bio and let everybody know a little bit about the formality side of you, and then we can just jump right into your story.
Sounds good.
All right. So while she's in tune with the challenges of daily life, Josephine's disciplined and genuine approach to life and work keeps her and her clients focused on being high on life. She's someone who prefers comfort over style, natural over man-made, good earth over Starbucks, and pecorino over parmigiana. And she knows that the best coffee is always served in tiny little cups. Josephine leverages a diploma in positive psychology and well-being, and she's provided years of coaching and education to elders in long-term care. In a world that needs connection and relationships to thrive, Josephine understands how the science of positive psychology can be applied to create greater, higher levels of well-being. So amazing. Clearly, we have positive psychology in common and a complete so much to talk about in that space alone. But I would love to hear more about your work in elder care and about the company you founded to support those lovely folks.
Yeah, well, actually, so positive psychology has been sort of the foundations of me getting started. In 2016, I founded the Positivity Center here in Calgary. And it just stemmed from learning. So I was taking a diploma. And the thing I tell everybody always is that positive psychology is meant to be lived. So yes, it's something you learn from research papers and books, but you have to live it to experience it. And so as I was learning, I was then transferring what I was learning into my own life and then immediately into the lives of people that I knew. It just happened to be that I had a great auntie at the time who was in long-term care, and we started visiting every week and just kind of rekindled the relationship. And she was kind of my guinea pig. And every time I would learn something, I would try it with her, and it had a positive impact on her or our relationship or on her relationship with somebody else. So I just thought, I got to do this. And it just sort of branched from there. And then I ended up being a volunteer. And that was kind of the pinnacle moment for me, is just volunteering. And I'll never forget it. It was like quite a process, because I had, of course, studied, and somebody I'd met with, my husband connected me with a friend of his who was also an executive at a community here in Calgary. And so we just met over, well, it was Starbucks, not a Good Earth, but we met at a Starbucks. And he just said, well, you know, if you're kind of wondering if elders are who you want to work with, then just volunteer and you'll find out. And so I was kind of hesitant at first, to be honest, because I really just wanted to study and I didn't want to do anything else or have any other overlapping, you know, focuses. But I decided to just take his advice anyway. So I did that. And so the first day is sort of a memorable day for me, not sort of, it really is a memorable day for me because it happened so long ago and I still remember as if it just happened yesterday. So basically I was signed up to help with a bowling program. So we were doing an adapted bowling and had such a good time. And people, even there was like companions coming up to me and saying like, do you do this for a living? Do you work with, you know, elders? And I was like, no. And they're like, oh my gosh, you're so good at it. And your eyes light up and da, 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 da. Anyways, I had such a good hour. It was so much fun. And the plan was always, my husband was like, call me when you're done. So of course the volunteer experience ends. I get to the truck, I call my husband and he's like, hello. And I'm like, hi. And he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. Cause I was just crying, full of tears of joy. And it was that moment that I knew that everything I was going to do in my life was going to be to impact the life of someone aging.
Ugh, I wish that you could all see her speak this story and tell about her journey and how she came to this passion, because the animation and the way that your eyes do light up when you tell this story. It's amazing.
I want to be on TV. It's so true. Like my hands are going and I'm just like so excited to share this story. And I'm so glad you asked me, because I never really saw my story as a story of hope before you kind of saw that. And so you've given me such a gift, because you've helped me see my story from a lens of hope.
That's so wonderful. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. But it truly is a story of hope. I mean, often people will say to me, hope is about kids or people that are looking to change the world, looking to, you know, still reach their goals and progress towards that future better than today. But why does that have to be limited to the young, right? One of the first things that you and I talked about was how you, like the elders, we have so much to learn. They have so much to give, and they should absolutely feel joy and passion until the day they take their last breath on earth. Tell me more about that philosophy that you have, because it is so hopeful.
Well, that was the seed of hope that was planted, because as I worked with my auntie and just tried little things in conversation, in relation, it wasn't that she was a client, right? I never treated her like that. In fact, I probably never treated any of my clients like clients, you know, their family. But I felt and saw that her tomorrow could be better than her today. And that became my mission. I just believe that everyone deserves to have meaning and purpose when they take their final breath. And so, yes, hope is something that happens for the young, but what about how we end it? Like, it is so important that we end it well and that we feel good about the life and the legacy we're leaving behind.
And it must be so hopeful. I don't know any other word. I hate to use that word all the time, but clearly it's the word I use all the time. But it must be so hopeful for the people that you're working with, because often we feel like, and I bet they experience, being left behind, being left alone as their partners die, as their kids move on to their own lives. The loneliness that must set in for these people that you're working with, I can only imagine the kind of hope you must give them.
Yeah. In fact, I kind of got introduced to working one-on-one with people as a volunteer first before I got hired on by families. And even when the recreation manager introduced me, she would introduce me as somebody positive that they could have a conversation with. And so, yeah, I've seen clients go from having a perspective of, you know, there was one gentleman I worked with where I remember him clearly saying to me, he's like, if I could choose the green button to live or the red button to die, I'd press the red button.
Oh my God.
But he didn't say that 6 months later. You know, and it's not that I'm an expert in mental health at that capacity, but he was just, it wasn't that he even had the means or that he's in such a place where there's too many safety measures for him to even go down that path. But he thought about that path, and my auntie too, you know, they wanted to end it because it just wasn't worth it anymore. And so it's so important that they find hope or find like that emotion of hope, that experience of hope that can help them, you know, set a goal. Find a way to achieve that goal. And it can be small goals too. It can just be like, how many laps am I going to do of walking every day? And how is that going to make me feel? That's a goal. And that's a pretty hefty goal for somebody who's old and frail, maybe 93 years old and living in long-term care. So,
but we talk about small steps towards big goals for all of us. I don't think it should be limited to aging. And it's cool the perspective you have, because I have so many conversations with, you know, people at the edge of retirement or, you know, have been retired for a little while and maybe their health is failing and they start to give up. They think, well, I don't have enough time left to accomplish goals, because goals seem to be this big lofty thing, but they don't have to be this big lofty thing. They just get to be whatever it is you want to achieve tomorrow, a week from now, you know? And it's the same lesson that we teach all of us. Start where you are and take that small step, which, you know, in turn incrementally gets bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. And I found that like the goal setting thing is something we have to redefine, just like hope has to be redefined and, you know, positivity has to be redefined, because they were never intended to be these concepts that would get misconstrued and, you know, possibly bring toxicity to our lives. They were meant with good intentions. And yeah, goals is one of those things. It doesn't have to be this lofty, you know, 10-year vision. You know, my husband and I actually currently are kind of meeting with financial planners, and almost every single one of them keeps asking me, at what age do you want to retire at? And I'm like, 80, maybe. Like, don't ask me what age I want to retire at. I want to work for as long as possible.
Doing this work that you love, because then it's work.
Well, it is not. And, you know, if I am ever in a community setting living with people who are aging alongside with me, then I hope that I'm helping them feel hope just by being with them. And that still is kind of part of my life's mission / work.
Yeah. Yes. The life's mission that you've turned into something that pays your bills. Got it. Right. Amazing. So tell me about the Positivity Center and the kind of work you do within the Positivity Center.
Sure. So Positivity Center basically exists to enhance the well-being of organizations. And we do that by working on the well-being of the people. And primarily one of our main areas of focus is, you know, healthcare, long-term care, caregivers. And so a lot of the work that I've been doing as of recent is either coaching caregivers or creating tools from the field of positive psychology for caregivers to use to help them manage their own lives and positively influence the lives of the people that they are there to support. And so that's sort of just been a couple of projects that have just been released. And we can do that, you know, for any organization. It's really about, you know, catering and personalizing tools and helping people select the tools that will best work for them. Because the field always takes that scientific lens to things, which is important. But I always tell people that the research from the field of positive psychology will tell you what works sometimes for some people, but you have to find out what works for you most of the time. And so that means, you know, kind of implementing the scientific method, as I kind of tell people, and, you know, doing different things with different variables and adjusting things and creating different hypotheses, and what works now doesn't work later. And then what works later doesn't work anymore. And then you have to shift and adjust. So it's about being, you know, agile and flexible and just, you know, learning about all the different tools so that you always have something to dip your pockets into. You always have a tool that you can use in a certain situation. And I also try to coach people to not, you know, caregiving is because I've worked with, you know, individuals in care settings, I have just witnessed what caregivers go through. And so all of my work has just been based on that lens, that context of just watching how difficult their jobs are and some of the struggles that they go through. And of course, that hope thing just kind of rises up in me. And same thing I thought with my auntie, that her tomorrow can be better than her today. And I think that with caregivers too, like their job could be way easier than it is right now. And it is a systems things, but it's also an approach. And so, but do caregivers understand the tools? Do they have the tools at their disposal? And can they use them?
Yeah. How did you find positive psychology?
I lost my job.
Tell us more, Josephine.
Yeah. I was a mid-level leader in a jewelry company. What do you call that? Retail. I don't know. And just the home party, direct sales. Thank you. So I was a mid-level leader in direct sales. And of course, you think you own your own business, but you really don't. Somebody else owns the business, and the people that owned the business decided to shut it down. And then I was just faced with, holy crap, like all my dreams just basically collapsed, because I had big dreams even then, and was kind of implementing some positive psychology things without knowing it with people on my team. And then I got some coaching, and through that process, we created like what an ideal job and life would look like for me. And then we just found an avenue for me to be able to get the credentials that would then support me being able to do what I wanted to do in the world. Yeah. And at that point, it actually, interestingly enough, at that onset, it was about children. I wanted to create a happy school, which has now become a happy home, if you will. And I use that word happy loosely. I don't mean to imply happy-go-lucky Pollyanna all the time. But, you know, happy is a couple things, and we don't need to go into that today. But it is about personal fulfillment and meaning and purpose, just as much as it is about feeling happy. So yeah, it evolved as I learned and as I read studies and came across research about the elder demographic. And that's kind of what shifted my focus in the middle of my program to go, I think I really want to work with elders.
And clearly you are doing an excellent job there. So it's amazing that you get to add your gifts to that demographic and to those fantastic people to help them live out their passions as well. Mm-hmm. I know that part of the work that you do with elders is with their families as well, their kids, and supporting or helping the adult children to support their parents longer term when you're not working with them.
I indirectly help them. Yeah, because they hire me to take care of their loved one. And sometimes it's been because the relationship has drifted, it's broken. And then I work with their loved one. And then I had one daughter say to me, like, you've given me back the mother that I've always wanted, because they just feel disconnect. Something happens. And then, you know, one thing just layers on top of another. And we get into a dark spiral about, you know, why our relationship is so broken. And we forget that there was a good relationship, you know, way back when. And when you help some one person experience higher levels of well-being, then what happens? That ripples. And of course, it's going to ripple to the persons that they're closest to in their life. You know, so it happens indirectly. So interesting that you bring that up, because when you were saying to me, I'm like, no, I actually don't help them, but I do indirectly help them. It's true. And they don't hire me to help them. They hire me to help their loved ones. And the one-on-one coaching has been difficult because, you know, the last year has kind of made what I do non-essential. So I currently do not work with any one-on-one clients. And I'm really focusing all of my efforts on the caregiver support piece, so that I'm kind of going another avenue. So if I can't spend time one-on-one with an elder in long-term care right now, then I'm going to help the person that is in there with them. So that's how I've been able to go about it recently.
But talk about having an exponential effect, because, you know, the caregivers are, you know, it's one to many, you're one to one, but they're one to many. Yeah. And overall, collectively, you would increase wellness.
Well, and I think that the company and what I do has evolved over time, because that's exactly what I started to see and talk about hope and then seeing what hope could do for tomorrow. I saw myself helping people one-on-one, but I also saw myself helping many. And the only way I'm going to be able to help many is to be able to help people that are helping many, right? So it's just a natural evolution, you know, and it's pretty cool.
It is very, very cool. It's very cool. So hope, and I believe that you believe this as well, that hope is contagious. How can we, like, are there things you say, are there things you do, or is that spread that hope in others, that, you know, spread that hope contagion, so to speak? Or do you, like, is it just who you are? I believe hope can be taught, and I'm wondering if we can teach some listeners some of your strategies, because I tell them my strategies all the time, but maybe we could share some of your hope spreading strategies.
That's so cool that you've asked that. So I would say from my lens, from my perspective, and having spent a lot of time digging in the field of positive psychology, hope is an emotion. And it's one of the top 10 positive emotions. So knowing that that's the case, and knowing that if you feel positive emotions, it opens your heart, it expands your mind, it helps you see more of we, right? The us, and less of me and just myself. So then building on top of that, it makes sense that if hope's an emotion and it causes you to ripple, right, open and expand yourself, it's something that you feel that becomes a part of who you are, that ripples out into the world. So I've always felt like that is a primary way in how we can teach hope. right? By feeling things and by doing actions that are connected to those feelings, those emotions. So that would be my first thing is just be it, right? Exude it and allow it to just naturally ripple, you know, into to the places and the people in your life. And how we can teach people hope, and it's not meant from, let's just intentionally to create hope as an emotional experience means that each person has to define what hope is for them, and they have to define the experiences that will help increase or help them feel hope. And because, you know, have you come across Snyder's hope theory?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So it's just about them thinking about the different pathways or goals or avenues that they can take, that they believe that they can take, you know, that will produce hope. And so it's different for everybody. So it's not that I can say there's like, you can teach hope by telling somebody to write down, you know, their goal for the week. Well, you could, but how do they do that? How do they go about doing that? Do they have the belief? Are they connected with people as they're doing that? So there's a lot of layers, and I think, again, it comes down to the individual and what they might need as an individual to create hope. And also, truly, truly, I believe it starts with a belief that hope is possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So well aligned, so well aligned. So for the listeners out there, I know I talk about hope theory quite a bit on the podcast, Snyder's Hope Theory. And for those who are brand new or listening, because Josephine is here, hope theory is the idea of goals. So achieving future vision so that your future is better than today. Plus agency thinking, which is your motivation, your why, the intrinsic reason for being. Plus pathways thinking, which is your ability to overcome barriers and boundaries that are absolutely going to get in the way of accomplishing all those things you want to accomplish. And I think you need to have all of those, you know, it's circular, hope theory. Sometimes I display it as a kind of an equation, and sometimes I display it as this thing that continues to go around, because as you set new goals, because you've connected to your new why and you run into the barriers and you adjust, that is hope, right? That is creating a future better than today. I also loved what you said about, and you mentioned it at the beginning as well, where you need to find what works for you most of the time, not what works for everybody all of the time, but what works for you most of the time. And then you need to measure and readjust, because what worked yesterday may not work tomorrow. And I think that that's something we forget about. I think we're all pretty clear that not everything works for all of us, but I think we forget that it may not work forever. Even once we find what works for us, that it may not work forever. And I know that they speak a lot about that in positive psychology, but yeah, I think it's something that when we are taking the research into reality, that we don't always consider.
Yeah, because it can lead to sort of that comfort that we like.
Yes.
Things will always be this way and this will always work. And then we get caught when a storm comes.
Mm-hmm. And we don't adjust, and we wonder why what worked yesterday didn't work today. And it's frustrating and annoying. We have no patience for it.
No. Well, I just started working with a coach, because I was like, all the tools that I have used are not working right now. They're just not. And it is because of, you know, the global pandemic. To be honest, I have suffered immensely through this pandemic. And especially because I love being with people. I got to have a lot of autonomy. So having choice taken away is like, oh man, I have to find another way. I have to find another way. I have to find another way. What do you mean I can't see my client? Now I have to find another way. So yeah, I think my juices were getting kind of empty in terms of, like, you know, kind of thinking of all these different ways all the time. And so I just, like, I need help too. I help people, but I also need help.
So very important. And the second time that this has come up in conversation today, I was asking one of my mastermind groups this morning what it is they think I can teach them, especially with my work in hope, what it is that they would like to learn from me. And somebody said, I want to learn how you come back from adversity, how someone who's as hopeful as you, as positive as you are, who always seems to be able to take the next step. What does it look like when you are where the rest of us always seem to be? Yeah. And that was quite humbling. I really liked that, but it's really important that regardless of the fact that we are doing this work, we are, our hope levels are high. We have learned the things. And also I think, I believe this to be true about you as well. Naturally, our hope levels are high to begin with. It's that whole nature versus nurture. But that the strategies and tools don't always work for us either. For even people that are supposed to be experts in this work, it doesn't work for us either. And we have to continue to readjust and get the resources we need and talk to the people and get the support behind us to be able to look at those alternative pathways back to hope theory, you know? And I think it is really important to talk about and to talk out loud, to recognize that we aren't some unicorn because this is the work that we do and we're supposed to be experts in it. It just means that we know where to look for the next tool or the next strategy to overcome that barrier that's in the way.
Well, I would actually say for myself that I experienced many dark, gloomy times. What hope does for me is it allows me not to get sucked into like an epitome of blackness. Okay. You know, a few years ago, I was in the Netherlands and I was in this amazing little town in the southern part. And we went on this little tour and we went to see these underground villages that were created right at the end of World War II that were really designed for like cities to go and hide so that they weren't killed during the war. They ended up not having to use this one particular one, but of course you go under into these caves and it is like complete blackness. Have you ever been in complete blackness?
No, I can't even imagine.
It is the scariest thing ever. Like she has the guide had a light, like a very small light that illuminated where we were. If you looked behind you, you could not see anything. If you looked too far past the light, you couldn't see anything, but she had this light that illuminated where we were, which was great. And that's kind of like hope. You don't need to go into the past. You don't need to go too far into the future. You just have this light that illuminates where you are. But she did shut the light off at one point. She's like, are you guys okay if we shut the light off just to experience this? And I was like, okay. And so she shut the light off. And literally, if my hand was right in front of my face and I didn't see it until my hand touched my nose. So what, like an anecdote, if you will, or an analogy for hope. Hope is just enough light to illuminate the path you're on so that you don't have to sit in complete blackness.
Oh my God. That's like the best quote ever. Yes, it is the light that illuminates the path that you're on right now. Amazing. Amazing.
I have goosebumps everywhere.
Oh my God. So yes. So
I want to share that one. I just want to share that with listeners. I teach, you know, hope is part of what I teach because it is a huge part of, you know, the field of positive psychology. But I probably teach this because I wasn't one of those people that got, you know, Sonia Libermirsky's work about, you know, 50% being it, you know, your genes and 40% being choice and 10% being circumstances. I am the 40% choice because if I wouldn't choose to put hope in place or to experience positive emotions or use my strengths or align myself with my values or reach out to people to help me achieve my goals, I would be in a dark vortex. So it's probably more common than not to be in those dark places. And that's why it's so important to have tools, because the tools prevent you from getting sucked into the darkness.
Where that light is not illuminating the path that you're on.
Yeah.
Josephine, what gives you hope?
What gives me hope? People. I think that almost all of my hopes comes from being with people, being in connection with people. If I think back to any goal that I've ever achieved or even tried to achieve, it was never on my own. Right? Like my very first goal was like, I want to be a mother. Well, clearly I can't do that one on my own. When I went into senior care, what happened? It was conversations with people. So I'm so hopeful that the people will always continue to be there for people so we can continue to have hope in this world. and have people doing the things that they've been called to do to make the world a better place.
You are an incredible human. You are amazing people. Thank you so, so much for this conversation. I wanted to go on forever. and I know that off recording, it will go on for the both of us a lot longer and for many more days and years. I feel like we are so well aligned in how we think, and I have so much to learn from you and continue to learn from you. So thank you for sharing your brilliance with us all here today. Everybody, you want to get in touch with Josephine to hear more about the work that she's doing, the human that she is. The Positivity Center is where you will find her. We will put all the links in the show notes. And just thank you again for sharing all of your brilliance with us.
Thanks for the gift, Lindsay, because just being here with you was an experience in hope.
Amazing. Thank you. Take care.
You too.
I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of the Hope Motivates Action podcast. These episodes are a labor of love. Inspiring conversations with hopeful people make my heart happy. If you also love this episode, it would be amazing if you could go to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. 5 stars if you're into it. It's these reviews that encourage Apple to promote this podcast to their network. And the more people that listen, the more hope we can spread into the world. Don't forget to check out the show notes of this episode to find all the links to my guests, books, and other resources referenced in this episode. You'll also find the link back to my website, where you will find additional support and resources for you, your team, and your community. I truly believe that the future will be better than today by taking action over the things we can control. And hearing from these guests on these episodes, I know that even more hopeful future is totally possible. I'm always looking for inspirational guests, so if you or anyone you know would like to be a guest on the show, please reach out. You can find me on the contact form of my website at expertinhope.com or by email at lindsay@expertinhope.com. When I was a teenager and my sisters were leaving the house to go out for the night, I always made it a point to remind them to call me if they need me. It was my way to tell them that I cared and would always be there for them. I'd love you to know the same, so all of you listening out there, call me if you need me. Again, thank you for your love and support of this podcast, my work in hope, and your intentional focus on making your future better than today. After all, hope without action is just a wish.